Repeat it, we are very quiet.
Comrade Roy.
Well, I'd like, just for a minute or so, to go back to what this young man over here said when he said Dr. Gandhi's more or less psychological angle was to make people better to adapt themselves to the viciousness, callous possibility instead of the other way about changing it and letting it carry on. Well, apropos of that, before I became a soldier, I was one of those marvellous people. I was in the British Army fighting in Hitler. This is a personal recollection. Say he's on dodgy ground when he talks about what is normal and what is not normal. Now, I resigned from the bloody army in the middle of the war, and they called, didn't they? And I had a court martial, and I refused to kill other workers, and I was abnormal immediately. Now, if I'd have accepted the guns and the bayonets, and I'd have seen it get to it the other night, anyway, I would have been normal. So what the bloody hell is he talking about normality in this setup? As a matter of fact, if you go to church and get on your knees like the Catholics do, Ace, King, Queen, Jack, and you pray to God, that is normal. But like the Yorkshire River, and you say, God's been talking to me, you're cracking. So I ask you, what is normal?
I think that I did not say that I am trying to ask the individuals to fit in with the system. I at no point I meant
well,
this.
Not saying that
at no point I talked about normality. That was I am only saying that this is an idea which can be worked out and thought over, and there is a chance to promote this further for the use of human beings, mankind as a whole. That's what I am saying.
Comrade Peter, do you have anything? Go ahead.
Can I ask you? It seems to me that you take the view that exploitation or the desire for exploitation is built into human nature, among other things that you've said. For example, you've instanced the sheep-like attitude of thousands of people at the present time as another factor which seems to be part of the human makeup. And you've also instanced the leadership idea, also supposed to be inherent in human nature. And I would expect that also you think that real conflict, warfare, is also a part of human nature. Now, what I want to know from you is this. If what you say is true, then it logically follows that the kind of society that you want, which Peter Lawrence says coincides with the kind of society that he wants, is completely impossible under those circumstances. Because what you are saying is that here you have human beings in human society who have divisive and contradictory factors built into their nature. Now, you can't alter that genetically. If that is true, that is what we inherit. And consequently, the contradictions that arise, ostensibly according to you, out of that, are impossible to solve. So would you mind telling me how it is that you can hold an opinion like that and yet postulate the kind of ideas which we postulate and you are postulating? Now, no, I'm not saying that we coincide with your approach, but I'm accepting that you want a system of democracy, you want a community of interest, you want people to behave like what you think human beings ought to be. Would you mind telling me how that can be done?
Well, number one is that I did not say genetically or environmentally, and I therefore want to say again that I don't want to be committed about this, that they are genetically or environmentally they are. I am just saying that the human nature is such that there is a variation among the human beings. Some are higher on certain variables and traits than others. And those who are higher, whatever reason may be, whether the way they have been brought up or outlook or genetic or whatever factors may be, so they are obviously going to use that potential in some way or the other. Now, it is the same old example that if you a brave person, you could give him good channelization, so you could make him a very perfect useful. And if you don't give him a good, healthy environment channelization, you could make him destructive. I mean, again, it's a very social related thing. I'm just giving this example. So therefore, it really depends on our environment and on our circumstances. But the point which I want to emphasize is this, that I have used frequently the word to some extent.
Yes.
And this, unfortunately, is there. In my opinion, this is also a fact.
Can you give any proof of that?
Well, you observe people.
Scientific proof, I mean.
Well,
there is an exploitation which is limited. I mean, you're only assuming that it can be limited. I mean, if it's there, it's there. There's no question about it.
I am using the word that to some extent. Now, you can interpret it in terms of limited.
Well, I'd like to know what the extent would be.
Well,
it's a fair proposition.
It's again a relative and individual thing. And I am not against socialism. In the beginning, I said I am not against a better system of organization. What I am saying, I repeat again, whatever system we may adopt, that many people else are going to contribute. There could be a whole world could become a communist. I don't know. Or communism. Whole could become socialism. Whole could become capitalism. It could be a social democrat. It could be anything. I don't know what it could be. But what I am saying is that the time has come that we start thinking globally rather than at small political boundaries level. And to think that, we have also to think that we would need some kind of management, whatever you may call it, howsoever you may structure it. Who can provide a coordination? You can call it coordinating government, you can call it management government, you can call it whatever you want. And I am not giving my concepts about everything because I myself don't know what at the time people would like to have it. And that's again, you can say that my democratic outlook.
So actually, anything is possible, according to that.
Anything is possible. But what I am promoting is only that this time that we start thinking globally.
So it's got nothing to do with human nature. If anything's possible, it's not human nature, is it?
Well, what I said, and I repeat, that what so far I have read and understood human behavior.
Human behavior.
Yes.
That's not human nature.
Well, human behavior is that... that there is always some level of variation among people.
True.
And therefore, because of that nature, people are susceptible to various factors.
Yeah, like social.
Yeah. Like social.
Comrade Peter, do you have any?
No.
Comrade Guy.
I enjoyed listening to your remarks on the relations this evening, but I think that whilst I was... be in agreement with the spirit of a lot of what you say, I'm still disappointed that I haven't heard adequate answers to some of the important contradictions which I think are in your analysis, parts of the of your argument which contradict one another. The part that the speaker this evening, for instance, pointed out, that the idea that having a global society is a very good idea. In fact, of course, capitalism in many ways has produced that irrespective of your views. The global postal service, global telephone service, global communication, traveling communications and trade, commerce. That's all there, working on a global basis for the ruling class. But how you translate that sort of technical globality, if it's actually, global structure, to make it in harmony with a social one, you haven't explained how that could possibly happen aside from socialism. You agree and nodded along that socialism is a good idea, but still I get the impression that you're thinking that perhaps there is some other way other than socialism of producing that. A lot of the remarks that you made seem to be causing confusions in some quarters because of the vocabulary, the sort of vocabulary that's being used. In other words, when pressed on the point of government, you seem to revert to the idea that you're not really speaking so much in terms of people being bullied and a police force or some coercive state apparatus being used, but what you're really speaking about much more is administration. Particularly on the last one, you referred to that. You don't even matter what you call it so much. You're talking about a well-ordered democratic administration of things, which is, of course, the gist of the socialist argument. And then you mentioned you have this disagreement with the idea of forming a party. But at the same time, I noticed at the end of your statement of intent there, it says, if you share my thinking, then I invite you to join with me, so there'll be a collective group of people with a common aim, so that we can get together, hold meetings and communicate with one another to promote this movement. In other words, it's got all of the structure of a political party, except you're not calling that, you're calling it that, which the Socialist Party have done. Not because we've got some sort of, idea about the value of a political party in itself, but we see it as being the only workable way of people implementing the sort of changes that you've endorsed.
Yeah, the difference, I think, between your approach and my approach is that your approach threatens to some individuals or groups of individuals with vested interests who may like to think that they are going to lose some materialistic gains.
They will, yeah.
Yeah, so therefore, my movement is not putting any, at least at the time being, again, you might say that I'm contradicting what I'm saying, but I am just being modest, because Socialist Party has been in existence for 50 years or more, even formally for more than 50 years. And my movement is 15 days. And and therefore, I, and you have been, as Peter has said, 4 million people, and I am at the moment just one or a few more sympathizers. So therefore, it has to pass through so many clarifications and so many ideas. Now, you therefore cannot expect a kind of very extraordinary image, coming out of me. So I am very happy to accept this kind of limitation which I have. But what I am saying is that things have to develop. Obviously, they will take in the shape of a group. And I said in the beginning, it would be a pressure group. But it will not be called party, but again, you can say the same, similar thing. I mean, I don't deny that it could be labeled something. But it has to be collective to make it pressure. You can't make it a pressurized group otherwise. And as I said in the beginning, as the circumstances develop, it's not my government. The world doesn't belong to me. It is people. We all are there. You may have a different thing. So therefore, it depends if my movement becomes popular and it is acknowledged by many people. So they may like the idea of movement, but they may like to structure it differently or structure the government or the administration differently. Now, whether they may have a police, they may not have a police. They may have police to bully individuals, they may not have. Now, I can't decide at the moment. I repeat what I said, that it is a movement with an intention to bring people who have sympathy with this kind of ideas together and become a pressure group, and then publicize and bring awareness, or you can call education or information, if Steve would like to call it information rather than educating other people. So you give information to other people and ask them that this is the way, this is another way to work collectively. Now, there would be, I still say that there would always be some flaws, whatever system of world government or national government comes. But certainly it's a matter of less and more.
Peter?
Yeah, please.
After that comment, on the point that you say that the difference, the main difference between us is that whereas the ideas of a pressure group are fairly vague and you're not insisting on any particular line, you think that some way the social structure can be changed by that. We have a group together with a common political intent. Just take one of the examples as a something to look at. You mentioned that India was a democracy. Now, socialists would dispute that on the grounds that you've got in excess of 630 million people who are resident in that corner of the world. 630 million. How many of those people have got any claim to ownership or control of their environment? Very few. In fact, we find that something like over 7/8 of the population of India own nothing at all to speak of.
No, I use that example, if I can interrupt, not to support it. I wasn't admiring it.
Yeah.
I was only saying that that democracy and this democracy, the difference is kind of people's maturity. Now, over the years in Britain, because of historical reasons, our democracy here, the way we function in our democracy, now you are a group sitting here, or we are a group sitting here. So we are functioning democratically. Now, if you go to India and gather the same level of group, and you see the functioning, and this, so there's a different level of functioning. Now, that is not as disciplined level as this one, because they don't have the training, they haven't matured. I mean, they haven't passed through that phases which we have passed through here. And I was using just an example. I think India is a democracy by name. It's not a democracy. I don't call it democracy, where people even don't know what is vote.
Yeah. Just one from the way that you change that political set, the only way that I can see being a sensible way of changing a structure where you have the inequality that you do in India all over the world. Special about that example, the rough estimate that about, say, a tenth of the world's population own generally the means of producing food, clothes, and jobs. The only way to change that is by taking a concerted political effort. In other words, anything which is less than that, which is to do with the general pressure to change ideas, we would say is politically not well advised. It should be that the energy that goes into the pressure group should be directed instead to the political party which is seeking to change the world from capitalism to socialism.
Well, as I think Peter earlier on in his discussion or in his arguments, he commented, and he commented on my observations too, or my approach too, when he said that by creating a world government without socialism could become a sort of disunity in itself and anarchy in many ways. Now I think that there are a number of things which are really very relative, very subjective, and matter of opinions. Now, nobody knows at the moment that what, in 20 or 30 years' time, if there was a world government, what would happen. And I think that it would depend at the time the people who are influencing it, running it, making it, deciding about it. So I think that it's too early for us to see. It's possible that what Peter has said, that might happen. It's possible that what I am saying, that might happen. It's possible what you are saying, that could happen. It's possible that I think that when we talk at the moment, the one of the reasons between Western bloc and socialist bloc or communist bloc is that they are becoming source of threat. They if you go to Russia, they think that America wants to destroy communism. If you go to America, or they say that Russia wants to destroy our capitalism or private or liberty under the name of democracy and freedom and so on. So therefore, they use different adjectives. But if therefore you talk of socialism, so you at once create so many enemies who are going to oppose you because they are there with either power and material sitting there. So if you say that, well, we are not touching your personal belongings. Now, here some of you might again say my contradiction, but this is again my modest way of, at the moment, looking things is, and that say that we, what we want is that we want to remove these political barriers and nationalities and create, now, as you have said, capitalist society has already created, but it hasn't created for many people. It hasn't created, in many ways, it could be created more, and there could be, and I think that would bring much more awareness globally, and that would perhaps further promote to socialism or communism or whatever godly administration or whatever adjective you want to use. For me, adjectives are not important, really.
Kumar Slav.
Yes, I think we're a bit unduly pessimistic about India in some ways, because in fact, we do have one or two contacts in India that happens, and for the socialist movement, and they've organised meetings, outdoor meetings, particularly at Kerala, and these have been quite well attended. I've got some of them on tape, which are obtainable. Secondly, on the question, I think you said earlier something about us having a movement of 4 million. Well, to save disappointment later, I must say that's not quite the figure.
No, Peter mentioned 4 million, am I right?
4.5 billion.
4.5 billion?
Billion.
Oh, I see. I apologise.
Now, that's a misunderstanding. He's talking about the population of the globe. Anyway, that's just a little misunderstanding. It's somewhat less than that. Now, I'd say that, obviously, my point is that...
I thought the world population was...
4-5 billion. Now, I'd like to make a couple of points that may have occurred to me. Firstly, on the question of sincerity. Obviously, there's a lot of sincerity, I think, from both sides of the platform, if I may say so. And, of course, the fact that both speakers are sincere, well-motivated, let's say, in the broadest sense. I don't think either of you are particularly trying to manipulate us and so on, like most politicians do. And that's good. I'd rather have people who are being sincere than people who are being insincere. But you can have lots of different people who are sincere. It doesn't mean that they're right, and it doesn't mean that their ideas are necessarily going to do us any good. So we must be more strict than that, despite the sincerity. Now, I've noticed that a friend from behind me asked a question about government, and the response from Dr. Gandhi, really, I felt, was to say, well, government can mean different things. You know, we don't use the word dogmatically, we can use it in different ways. Well, this interests me because, of course, I'm glad to see you trying to make the concept of government more flexible. It doesn't mean dictatorship. It does mean that you elect people, you vote for people, and they have to become more and more accountable to those who've elected them. This is very good. But of course, it may reach a point, I hope it will reach a point, where the idea becomes so democratic that Dr. Gandhi will have to actually drop the word government and say, this is not government we're talking about. We actually want something which is democratic control. And we actually abolish the word government, because if you look at its root, government means that somebody is governing somebody else. It means that one group is dominating another. So we can drop that word. Maybe there's more agreement there, or could be more agreement there than at first sight it would seem. What I'm worried about, however, is that there is a cap-and-root system in operation. Now, a lot of the people, it's very inconclusive, a lot of the talk tonight, I find, because what Dr. Gandhi, I think, has failed to come to grips with, if I can say so, is that there is a system in existence. You can't hide from the fact it exists in every single country in the world at this moment. It's called capitalism. And you have to respond to it. You can't escape from it. It's there. It's a way of running society according to a class division, according to producing wealth for profit and so on. I don't mean to speak of the socialists as Doddingtons to some extent. I don't really think he's done so very well. So there's this system of capitalism out there. Now, I'd stick my neck out this way, if I may, and say, well, if you're not against it, if you're not explicitly against it, then you're for it. You may not be actively for it. You may not be a great Thatcherite. Okay, but if you don't stand up and say no, then through acquiescence, through acceptance, you're for it. Even, let's say, reluctantly for it, but you're for it. And therefore, I think there's a very, very serious choice facing Dr. Gandhi, as is indeed facing the whole of the working class. Which of these two classes are you going to support, the ruling class or the working class across the world, which I think we're all members here? Now, on the question of human nature, I would have thought that your job, or what your training, let's say, in psychology, must have shown you flexibility, and it must have shown you the falsity, in fact, of the idea that people are born psychopaths, people are born peaceful, people are born leaders, born led. You said this earlier on the scene, that people are born in such ways, and I'm sure your work in psychology should show you otherwise, because in people's psychology you see very great changes at times. Perhaps some of those changes have been encouraged by you, for good or for bad. Perhaps some of those changes have come about not because of your efforts, but because somebody's lost a job or gained a job, and they come to you beforehand and because of the stresses they're having and so on. People's psychology and behaviour does change according to their conditions. They're not born that way. And this applies to all the conditions you listed.
Did I use the word born? I apologise. I don't think I meant
but
that.
The conclusion I draw from this is flexibility of human beings. This is very important. Now, I'll finish on one final point. You said in your opening comments this evening that the common people across the world are very similar psychologically and in their outlook. And as Peter from the front said, it's very true and it's very important. This is, in a sense, of socialists, really, that's our starting point. Take it one stage further, though. The common people are the same. The ruling class are not. For this simple reason, that although a capitalist tycoon or a magnate or whatever you call them, a financier in London, in many ways he's very similar to a financier in Johannesburg, or Moscow for that matter, state financier, in that these ruling class people, they rub shoulders together, they're very happy, they have the same habits, they have the same snobbery, they have the same hatred of the common people, they have the same ideas in many cases, and they get on quite well together in their clubs. But they have a division between them which really makes them different from one another. And that is that if you own property and I own property, we have something to fight over. And therefore, although we may rub shoulders in our club, we have a lot to fight over, and that divides us. As workers, we can be psychologically the same and economically the same, because I have nothing, you have nothing, so we have nothing material to fight over, so we're truly in solidarity. Now, I would simply take the lesson from that. What is making the world divided? What you say? It's not a division between workers, between common people. It's a division between the rulers themselves, between one rich capitalist and another rich capitalist. That's the problem. That's creating the divisions. And I would end up by saying this. The only way we're ever going to succeed in having a world society is when the common people overthrow the rich. If we don't do that, and I have to say, your programme does not really include that idea, and it should do, we're not talking interested in parties. We want you to adopt that policy. Don't really care too much how you do it, but do adopt it anyway within your programme to start with. There has to be an overthrow by the working class of the power of the capitalist class, because unless you overthrow that power, then the divisions between one property section, one nation, in fact, and another must remain.
Comrade, do you later, Comrade, where is Sala?
I will forget, Mr. Chairman.
Can we have
if I briefly give the answer.
You have no time.
Well, I would just very briefly say that I have actually forgotten what I wanted to say already. I think it will come back to my mind again. Sorry.
Okay, well...
It's your time. Yeah. I mean, this is the last one. We have no time.
I'm not going to take any longer than I think some of the questions
you have five,
taken.
You have three. Well, speak for 5 minutes.
I mean, I'll just put it...
Get on with it.
Yeah, I don't agree with either of the speakers. For starters, I'd just give you a little bit of information, Joe Gandhi, that you didn't start this movement, this idea, and it didn't start 15 days ago. There's elements of it existed before even the First World War, never mind the Second, and since the Second World War, basically coming out of America, but with a lot of support in Japan and so on, there's been a World Association of World Federalists and a branch in this country called the British Association for World Government, and they've been putting forward the ideas you call yours, your movement, etc. And I don't blame you for not knowing about them. As a fellow who goes to Biggest Corner, I think has occasionally done that, but never mind. Tiny organisation like the Socialist Party of Great Britain, and if you totted up the total numbers of people around the world who support these two ideas within the broad band, and I mean the band with the socialist movement that you would personally identify with rather than all those others, it is be a very small number in each camp. And I think the major problem lies in a misunderstanding of the difference between I beg your pardon. The gentleman at the back would like to speak. He's spoken before, and now he wants to interrupt.
Now, I think it's getting bigger, so don't underestimate.
No, well, I'd love it to get better.
Please, for me.
I'm trying to identify problems like the rest of us, right? And I would say that it's got to do with problems about understanding the nature of these words we use. Government, parliament, party, and we really need to look at what we're talking about, because we throw around these words or we avoid them out of some very facile sort of manoeuvre, basically. On the one hand, dealing with the socialist case, I've great respect for the Socialist Party of Great Britain. Of all the socialists, or those movements calling themselves socialists in this country, I respect the integrity of their views and their tradition that they've actually carried out in relation to the military machine and the refusal to identify with nationalistic militarism and all the rest of it, which a lot of other socialists have. But where I find problems with the Socialist Party of Great Britain is not on their analysis of what is or what has been, or their description of where we want to go, or where ultimately we want to be, but how we get there. And it's a crucial question, because people, especially in working class, and I'm from a nice middle class background, I'm trying to make no pretenses, but nobody with kids and so on, is going to take a step in the dark without knowing that they can win, or they've got a good chance of winning. And they do it when they have that confidence for themselves, that information for themselves. They know the books can add up another way, and they know how it's going to be done. And this is where I feel the argument on your side.
Well, Comrade, I'm sorry.
So really what I wanted to say, you're sorry. Well, I've spoken for a far shorter time than a lot of people who've asked questions.
Yeah. Well, I do have facts for you, though, you have.
What, just because I've made certain comments about your party? I mean, that's no democracy. Don't get me to
Patrick's...
I'm sorry, Comrade. So that,
just
I'm
1 minute.
I would like to thank all of you for a collection of 16 pounds and 78 pence. Now, this public forum under the name of World Government or World Socialism. Now it's the end of it. And now I call on Mr. Zhou to sum up on the behalf of his organization.
For God's sake, we've heard enough from both speakers tonight. You know,
Mr. Chairman, want to answer.
You have 5 minutes comments.
I think in the beginning I said that vested interest. Now, vested interest, I didn't expand in so many words, as you have said, rich and poor, and two rich people, they fight because of the property, they also join together. I mean, I didn't go into the details, but I agree. And I think I said in the beginning that the vested interests and the politicians who have created divisions, and when I talk about politicians, I am again talking about the vested interests. And it's a very old sort of philosophy, I think actually well said that in the world there's always a fight between those who have and those who don't have. Now, I don't dispute that. But what again I am going to say is, I don't say genetically, as clarified myself here from this man's question, and again, I apologize if I use the word born. I certainly agree that we are all subject to modifications, and that's what I was saying when I said that mature democracy. And that means that environment here is different, and environment in India, when I gave the example, is different. And that's why the democracy couldn't mature that much, and it has matured more here. Now, I'm not saying this has become the final stage here, or we have reached to the climax. We still are, learning, and we would need further modifications. But I'm just saying that environment certainly plays part in modification, and our behaviors are all prone to changes and so on. It depends how we all do it. And as far as the subject adjective word this government is concerned, I am not very touchy about it. I, as I said, that it's adjective, and it has been historically used, and it depends. Now, socialist government, they have used it in a different way, and capitalist countries have used it in a different way. But if people think that it is a touchy word or sensitive word, I'm sure it can be replaced by amendment committee or whatever. It's not important. But I've used only as I see, as people read, because this kind of idea obviously is going to be sold in people who, among countries where people don't have the same concept of government, because their English language concept may be different, I mean the particular this word, because of the study of English as a foreign language, or so. It can be changed, so it's not a touchy point. But certainly I agree with the ideas. And as far as my question of no and yes is concerned, now as I said, that I like all religions, but I am not a religious person in the sense that I was born in a Sikh family, and that's the way I was born. But I don't observe any ritual behavior. I think all religions in the world are social institutions, as I said earlier, and they all had to offer something, but they have been misused and they have been subjected to various labels. And same, my opinion is about parties. I think all political parties had usefulness. I am not a communist, but I think there are some good points in communism. I am not a socialist in the sense that I am not labeled myself, but I 100% agree that socialism has a lot to offer to this society. And I think that even capitalism with morality, if it was done, if there was a proper education, perhaps that also may have something to offer. But I am not linking myself with any. At the same time, I think that all have their own place and role, some more, some less. Thank you very much.
Well, Thanks, Joe. Now I call on Comrade Peter to sum up the argument on behalf of the Socialist Party.
Well, comrades, I think it's been a very, very useful discussion. And it's interesting to note that Joe Gandhi has modified his ground considerably during the course of the evening. However,
this is very political message.
I think when he reflects on what he said here tonight, he might find that you know, some of the things he said has been generally inadequate, in the sense that there are quite definitely fundamental questions which may not have occurred to him in the past, but which he now has to deal with and confront. He, during the course of the evening, he really dodged the point about the contradiction between holding that it is human nature to be exploitative and wanting leaders, and on the other hand, working for a system of world government. Although it has to be said that under pressure of points from the floor, he did modify his ground there and said that the exploitative nature of human nature was only to a certain extent, and then he modified that further and he got rid of the word human nature and said it was human behaviour. So we got some agreement there, because human behaviour is an individual response to social pressures which could be modified if you change the social framework. So we've at least clear the ground that there are no barriers there to socialism. However, he has still dodged the fact that the basic factor dividing society is the class ownership of the means of life. That's something that he's got to deal with, I put it to you. And he's dodged the very, very important question of how to bring society under democratic control in the interests of the whole community. Now, he's also got to deal with that question. You see, at the end of the day, what we are left with in his vision of the world is still, as has been said from the floor, a world of exploitation, no doubt about that. He wants to keep capitalism intact. He wants to keep the class ownership of the means of existence intact. He wants to keep the fact that the great mass of the world's population, the wage and salary workers, can only get access to a livelihood by selling themselves to their employers for a wage. He wants to keep intact the whole system where wealth is produced not for human need but for sale at a profit, and he wants to keep intact all the limitations and constraints on production and problems that arise from that system.
I'm not saying that.
Well, he's...
You're putting it in my mouth, but I'm...